I became concerned that I felt that the whole busing era was being put in a light that did not reflect what the positive parts of what happened with busing. There was certainly the negative, and everybody knows that. That was all over the television. It was, you know, known worldwide. And there are those who had to go through the stoning and those who left school, you know, because they did not want to be a part of that whole confrontation. Because for those who were in those schools, South Boston High School, Hyde Park High School, there was some stuff that went on at Charlestown High School. And that was very traumatic for the people who experienced that. But I felt for the majority of people in the schools, the experience was not that traumatic. Everyone was impacted by it because it was permeating the hatred, the discussion, it's being on the news every evening, people talking about it. It permeated everyone's lives. But there were some good things that happened as a result of it. And when I think of those things, I think of the way the schools were forced to be opened up to the community and participation by the community. The parent councils that the judge ordered that every school have, and that the parent councils must be composed of black, white, and at that time they were a little bit more into the bilingual, you know, piece, bilingual parents. And he even talked about what the racial breakdown had to be. The judge had not only councils within each school, but there was a citywide parent council. And part of their responsibility was to deal with issues as it relates to race and access, working with the school site councils, and they had a direct reporting to the court in terms of, you know, what some of the issues were. So they also became sort of the eyes and ears of the court. There were the college-university pairings that every school had external partners. So that was the beginning of a BU being matched with a school or a Northeastern. He opened the district up and brought that in as an additional resource, as well as community agencies. He ordered that the schools be fixed up. And the school department had to present to the judge the schools, what they were going to do, a timeline. And he had to approve it to make sure that schools within the black community were being, you know, renovated. He closed down certain schools like Boston Trade because it wasn't fit for kids to be in, and ordered that Madison Park be opened as a vocational center. You know, he ordered that black teachers, you know, be hired. So I ended up being appointed off the list. As with others, he ordered that when the school department was supposed to hire teachers and they weren't hiring black teachers fast enough because they said they can't find any, then he ordered that there be a recruitment unit and that the head of that recruitment unit must be black. And that person was given the tools, the resources to go out and hire and could hire black teachers on the spot wherever he or she found, you know, those teachers, and ordered that there be one-to-one hiring. For every one white teacher you hire, you better hire a black teacher. And then subsequent to that, then he also entered an order, teachers of, they called it at that time, other minority teachers, which was other teachers of color, Latino, Asian, and Native American. So that's how the school district became integrated staff-wise with principals, headmasters throughout the district. You had to hire black educators. And then he broke it down. In every school, you got to have a certain percentage. The percentage was no more than double, no less than half, because he didn't want the black teachers to be clustered in one school or a school here and there. And you say you have 25%, but you still have half of the schools without any, because the theory was black children need to see black teachers in front of them, you know, not only to teach them, but to let them know that they could aspire to, you know, greater heights as well. So, you know, that piece, the exam schools, a separate order around Boston Latin Academy, and John D. O'Brien then was Boston Tech. So a certain percentages that had to go into those schools because we weren't there. So, you know, it's so vast, student discipline. He had an order around that. You know, how are kids being disciplined? And there were 400 comprehensive orders that was a part of his whole piece. And then he had monitors to watch and see that the district was doing it. For each, I think it was twice a year, the school department had to do a report on all aspects of it. So it covered special ed, it covered bilingual ed, it covered school safety, it covered facilities, and any piece of the school department you could think of, the judge addressed it. So I believe at that time, it opened up access in terms of the funding. He had as a party to the case the State Department of Education. He had this Boston City Hall, the mayor. So all of these people, he brought them in, and they were parties to the case. And he ordered what they had to do to support the schools. And so as a result of that, I believe the quality of instruction was enhanced. I think there was much more fairness. And so I think we made progress in terms of the course offerings, even when you look at, I mentioned exam schools, when you look at advanced work placement, you know, he decided where those programs would be placed. He developed magnet schools to help integrate the schools so that you had a theme. At that time, I think the Yamana was a high school, and the theme was science and math. I mean, so he was on top of the educational aspect of it, too. And then over a course of years, after maybe 15 years or so, the judge vacated, you know, his orders and said, okay, you have pretty much reached a unitary status. And he left a couple of orders in place. One was that the school department could never again, was enjoined from intentionally or unintentionally resegregating Boston Public Schools. And the other piece that he left standing was a whole piece on the desegregation of the faculty and the staff, which the school department right now is in non-compliance with. But the climate in the country has changed drastically, so much so that one of the reasons that Beam in particularly has not gone back to court around the staffing order is there is concern on the behalf of the lawyers that given the climate in the courts now and how conservative it is, that if it was to go before the Supreme Court, given who's sitting there, there's a possibility that maybe it would be overturned. So it could possibly be enforced, but it could also possibly be, you know, vacated. And so Beam has been dealing with the superintendent and the school department and trying to put pressure on to reach the requirements of that order, which in itself is outdated because it only says at least 25% black and at least 10% other minority teachers is the language that's used. And the school department for the last 5 years, 6 years, has been going backwards. When I was in the district, and that was the other part when you asked about my interaction with this whole order is, and jumping to another subject for a moment, is that I was teaching. I was appointed by the judge. I taught for 9 years, and then I went to then it was called the Office of Equal Opportunity, to work in dealing with the whole staff deseg piece and monitoring equal opportunity for students. I went in as the assistant of George Cox, who was in the office at that time. He's a gentleman yesterday who was conducting the elections. He was at Court Street, and he was working on that. I then went in to be his assistant, and he left after I got there, and I took the position he had. And so I then worked in Central, reporting directly to the superintendent, monitoring the DSEC court order as it relates to staff, but then doing the whole equal opportunity, equal asset access part of education for students in the district. So I did that for 25 years until 2007. So I don't know how I got off into that. It was connected to your question. But anyway, talking about the change in education. So after the judge vacated the orders, then I saw how the district was slowly moving backwards. So it got to be more of a political issue to try to put pressure on the school department to do the right thing by children. So, you know, slowly, after a period of time, I think those who never liked the court order in the first place and was very resentful of any progress that was being made on the behalf of black children, and of course other children of other races benefited from it as well. Little by little, we saw first they changed a little bit of the student assignment plan, and then we'd have budget cuts, and with budget cuts, we closed some schools. Schools were always in our community. See, back in the day when the judge was still sitting on the bench, any of those kind of decisions, you'd have to run it by the judge. And if he didn't deem it to be a fair decision, an equitable one, then it would not be allowed. I'll give you an example. In 2081, yeah, I had just gone to Court Street.
1981?
I'm sorry. Yeah, 1981. Thank you. We haven't gotten there yet, right? We had a reduction in force. There was this whole Proposition 2.5 came about, and the district didn't have money, and so we had to lay off 1,000 teachers. The school department wanted to just lay them off strict seniority, as did the union. We ended up in Judge Gary's court, and Judge Gary said, nope, you'll have to lay off proportionately so that at the end of the layoff, you have the same percentage that you have now. And then once you have rehired all the teachers who have been laid off, then you have to move forth with getting to your 25%, because at that time we were like at about 20% black teachers. So at that time I was in Court Street, and so I was a part of monitoring how teachers were going to be laid off. You know, the rate, we got into a whole thing around the race of people, because now your race determined whether you were going to have a job or not. So you had some people who wanted to switch up and change their race. So it's like, you have to go through the Office of Equal Opportunity that I headed in order to do a race change. So that kind of cut that down. But anyway, you know, those were like the day-to-day kind of decisions that when the judge was sitting, the school department couldn't just make on its own. You'd have to get approval from the court. So once the court had vacated most of those orders, except the two that I mentioned to you a moment ago, then the district started making decisions that, in my opinion, began to slowly roll back some of the progress that we had made. So I think in terms of that, then we also saw a decrease in access to certain coursework. You know, where budgets were cut, you know, would depend sometimes on who had the most political clout and the most advocacy for what, you know, they wanted. And I think those kinds of decisions have gotten us to where we are now, where I think that we are not at the same place with providing quality education that we had gotten to back when the judge was sitting. And now I think it's going to take a whole different effort.